once a week-ish update on all things food, family, community, gardening, whatever. We call it Sidecar. If it has to do with the rituals around food and holidays, making food or taking it places, and remembering what we were eating during important times in our lives, we'll talk about it here. I am your host and bestie, Jen Coleslaw, coming to you from the Sola suburbs of Northern Virginia. Hi there, friends of mine. I started writing this last Saturday, September 9th, and I'm finishing it this Sunday, September 17th. So if it feels a little bit all over the place, that's why. The way the news cycle moves at such a rapid pace, I wouldn't blame you if you have no idea what I'm talking about for the first few minutes here. But let's go. How's everybody doing? Let's send some energy into the universe and the internet and the ether for everyone and anyone who's suffering under extraordinary heat or storms or wildfires or earthquakes or other disasters that seem to be unrelenting. And let's save and muster up another batch of energy for those who are living under fascist regimes where their freedoms are being stripped away on what seems like a weekly basis. I'm looking at you, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Texas. You all stay safe and keep voting. I have been up to my elbows and alligators at work and at my side hustles, and I will not lie. It is really wearing me down. It has been overwhelmingly hot here too, and that doesn't help. I know that it's hot a lot of places, and I hope that folks are starting to get some relief. Today, which again was actually last week, it's actually in the low 80s instead of the upper 90s, and while it is humid and thick outside, I will take it. But I will say that I have been thoroughly enjoying the U.S. Open tennis, and I don't know if you have been watching and saw the Coco Gauff match that was interrupted for almost a half an hour by climate activists. And as an environmental advocate who does this for my job, which is advocacy, not activism, like gluing my bare feet to the stadium floor, I totally have a theory about these sorts of activations. So this happened at Wimbledon as well. And my theory is that these people are actually being astroturfed by the oil companies to turn upper middle class and wealthy liberals who are concerned about climate change against the greater movement by being a nuisance at these kinds of events. I mean, when was the last time you saw climate activists like that? Totally zero information about their mission, just there to disrupt whatever's going on, like at a New York Giants football game or at NASCAR. Anyway, it's something to think about and keep an eye on. When you work on plastic pollution, and plastic, as you know, is made from fossil fuels, like I do, you start to see that the fossil fuel industry will do all kinds of bullshit in order to talk people out of believing that our action, or rather inaction, plus our addiction to fossil fuels is a big part of these man-made disasters that are attributing to climate change. And certainly, when doing public speaking, I get a lot of pushback from people who don't know the difference between weather and climate and smugly try to prove that climate science is fake because it snows in January where it's supposed to snow. But I just wait for those people to run out of gas, no pun intended, and then I just say, you know, you better hope that climate change is human-caused, because then we can actually work to fix it. If it's some naturally occurring set of horrific storms and earthquakes that have nothing to do with global warming or fracking or whatever, then we're just fucked. And then they usually sit down and shut the fuck up. So anywho, loving the tennis, love the young American talent. Okay, so now it's a week later, in a week that felt like a month of freaking Mondays. And I'll give you a little backstory on two of the most difficult things this week. So as you know, my work is running an environmental nonprofit here in Virginia, and the bulk of our funding comes from a non-competitive grant that is built up out of taxes that are voluntarily paid. Well, let me rephrase that. The legislation creating the tax was voluntary. The tax is now mandatory. Of beverage bottlers, distributors, convenience stores, and grocery stores. Basically, if you sell anything that should be recycled or that ends up being litter, like cigarettes, bottles, and cans, then you pay this really minimal nominal tax. Like for a small store like a 7-Eleven, it's $30 a year. And for a large store like Walmart, it's $60 a year. And that's just the most recent amount. I think in the last 2 years, we worked to double the amount. For decades, it was more like $10 and $25. So anyway, this money goes into a fund that's then distributed around the Commonwealth to localities that have a litter and recycling program like mine. And the allocation for the money is based on population and vehicle miles traveled. So the largest and most populated areas get the most money. And I work in the largest and most populated county, so we get the most money. So there's always kind of a target on our back because of that. But there's nothing I can do about that. While the funds go to the county, it is really just a pass-through right to my program where I'm embedded as a program. And I file all the applications, the end-of-the-year reports, the financial report, all the paperwork. I file it all. The county just transfers the money over. But in the last few years, unsurprisingly, the state agency, which in some ways is being overseen by some oil and gas and coal executives, please see earlier on my whole climate change rant, has had some beef after the paperwork is submitted. And this year was no exception, and it was really a doozy. Rather than make changes to the requested information, before that information is due, which is the end of July, they then instead kick your reports back to the end of August and tell you that they're wrong, even when they're not wrong, because you've quite literally answered the question that they've asked with the right and true answer. And they've simply changed what information they want, but they didn't actually change the question. And then they say, well, if you don't get the right information, then you're not going to get the funding. So I've been scrambling to get this very heavy lift of information out of a $1.5 billion county budget, which, by the way, I don't have access to because as a nonprofit, I'm not a county agency, to get that back to them by this past Friday, which is when their arbitrary deadline was, a deadline that they didn't tell me or the county about. And I only knew about it because I happened to have a colleague at their last meeting where they discussed this. Now, you can say this is just like a bullshit bureaucracy doing its thing, but I will bet you a dozen donuts that this is actually political. And I'm very interested to see what other localities, we have heard that there were 27 of them, and ours was one of them, incorrectly answered that question, and how many of them also missed the deadline because they didn't have somebody that they knew remind them that it needed to be in on time. Or if that deadline was really just for us. Anyway, I am all for getting better information out of the localities. This isn't how you do it. And if you're a little confused because I didn't explain it right, because I'm still really hopping mad about it, consider that you're running a race course and you have specific marked 10 check-ins over the course of, say, 10 miles, one every mile. And you run that race perfectly, and you check in at the 10 check-ins, and a week after the race managers call and say, oh, sorry, you didn't actually finish the race because you didn't check in at this check-in or that check-in. And you say, but wait a minute, those check-ins were not on the race course. And the race officials say, well, you still had to do them. That's what this is like. So anyway, then during this week where I was getting more and more agitated because I needed my county colleagues to figure out a dollar amount, which was very different from the original ask on the report. And let me tell you, you won't hear me praise the county very often, but oh my God, thank you, Eric and Tram, for scrambling the jets to get this information to me in time for me to submit it on Thursday morning. I'm totally getting flowers for them on my way to work tomorrow. I noticed that Mimi, our beautiful previously feral mama cat who we brought over from Ben's grandfather's storm drain with her mother and a bunch of other kittens, and that's a whole story for two chocolate cakes, she just wasn't looking very good. And she's normally a rarely robust chonker, and she had lost a lot of weight in the last 2 weeks, which is quite alarming for kitties. And she just wasn't moving around much. She had laid claim to an Amazon box on the floor instead of on the back of the sofa where she usually hangs out and watches everything all day. Instead, she was just in this box. And at first, I thought she had just had enough of the murder kittens versus blueberry bullshit, and she was just going to sit it out for a while. But then she just wasn't ever leaving her box. She'd eat if I brought food to her, but other than that, she just was so lethargic. So Friday, we brought her to the vet and discovered she was very sick. She was so anemic from a rapid onset autoimmune disorder that could have actually been caused by the change of seasons. And she was so anemic that they could barely get a blood draw from her to run the chemistry. Her red blood cells were so nowhere. Those of you who understand blood chemistry, her hemocrit was 13. And on cats, it's supposed to be between 33 and 55. And at 11, she's basically dead. So she needed a transfusion immediately. And the truth is that she's 15, and putting her through a bunch of transfusions at 15 to try to buff her up seemed very cruel. And so we gave her a few churus because I always travel with them when I have a cat going to the vet, and 100 kisses on her perfect white nose, and we let her go gently into the night. And that was shocking and sad. And even though I think I knew how bad it was because I could see how much weight she lost, it still came as a big shock. And amidst all this, I have hired 2 new people at the office, which is great and awesome because it should take some of the administrative stuff off of me and Ellie so we can do more of the work that we're good at, which is Ellie is really good at the science and I am really good at the advocacy. But, you know, onboarding new people is always an effort and you want it to be a good experience for them, but it has just been a lot. And I would like to be known as a good manager and a boss, even though I hate that word. I always say that we all work for the organization and you work with me. You don't work for me. But some folks come with the idea that they have no agency when they join a new organization, and it takes a little gentle leadership to give them the space they need to thrive instead of just exist. But do not get me wrong. I am all for folks just coming in, putting their heads down, doing the work, collecting a paycheck, and going home. Because it's a job. It's not a calling. But if you want more from me and from the job, if you want, you know, mentorship, if you want to learn more, if you are looking for a career change, the person that we hired was very heavily on the administrative side, and she very much wants to move to the advocacy side, and I absolutely can help with that. And so we're going to work towards that. But that's a lot of work on me to make sure that that happens so that she gets what she needs out of this job. Anyway, so I've been going to the office more, and I really feel like I'm taking such risks with COVID on the rise. But between this drama with the state funding and new people coming on board, I have to go in more often. And the truth is, I'd give just about anything to drop down to half-time on my environmental job and then make the rest of my salary at the animal hospital and creating content. Part of me, I think, really wanted the state to deny our annual funding, and that could still happen, so that I could make some wholesale alterations to both the organization and to my own life, because sometimes we need that kind of external pressure in order to make those changes. If we didn't get the funding from the state, we wouldn't have to do the work that is tied to that funding. We could do different work, and that might be a lot more fulfilling and a lot less frustrating. Anyway, I guess we'll see. Last year, we didn't even get the funding until 6 months into the fiscal year, so who knows what will happen. But I'm seriously reluctant to do the work for this grant if we're not going to get it, and we've already been working since the beginning of August that way. It's a terrible system, and I suspect it is terrible by design, and I hate that. When things can be better for everyone and they aren't, I really, really resent it. And if you don't think my judgment was suspect before, after listening to a year and a half of Sidecar podcasts, I brought home a teeny ginger kitten yesterday from the animal hospital that I had pledged to bring home before I realized Mimi was sick, for him to be a playmate for Blueberry, and we're about, 15, 16 hours in, and Blueberry hates him. I know this will change because Blueberry is sweet and the kitten is too, and they will be besties, but oh my God, what was I thinking? Why do people not ever try to talk me out of these things? I have this Mimi-sized hole in my world right now, and it's in the middle of the ladybug-sized hole that hasn't really been filled, as much as I love Rufus, and I absolutely love Rufus, but Ladybug and Rufus were such completely different creatures. You can't just replace one with the other. Anyway, Mimi and Pete were the only cats left who came over from Ben's grandfather's house. And Pete is the last kitty from Providence, and I'm really worried about what will happen when his time comes. And after the week that I've had, I have wanted so much to talk to my mother. And even though she's never had much empathy, she's often had good advice, and sometimes her advice is painful, and I don't want to hear it, and I often don't take it. But at least half the time, it's been good advice, practical advice, definitely something worth considering. But these days, I just don't bother to tell her anything because she can't even rustle up fake interest in me having cancer or a dying pet or friend. And that just makes me feel worse. So I just don't bother. I don't bother telling her anything. You know, after being gaslit by the rest of the family and my mother's friends and neighbors for almost 3 years running now, where I said that there was something physiologically wrong with her, I'm hoping that a new doctor that she's supposed to see tomorrow and a long list of actions that I typed out that were very much out of her character will get someone to either pay attention and, I guess, fish or cut bait with whether she's just a narcissistic monster without the buffer of my beloved stepfather, someone who just only cares about herself, or if she's suffering from a neurological illness. Either way, we need to know so that we can hire someone to deal with her bullshit who isn't us, or we can hire someone to give her the professional care that she needs in order for her to be safe. Okay, so the good news is that since I started the podcast 8 days ago, the hot weather has broken here in Virginia, and today we got some more rain, which is nice because it was so dry. No farmer's market this week, though, because I was just way too busy and I was just tapped out. The contractors who came to take the tree off of the house have been back several times fixing parts where the tree fell and then doing some other work, too. We've had a lot of deferred maintenance that we're getting around to, and today we picked out paint colors for the trim. I was texting colors of paint chips to Jen G, and she was weighing in, so I'm looking forward to seeing how that looks. That we're going to paint the trim around the windows and the doors that the contractors are sort of rehabbing. We have one beautiful window that is still original to the house that was built like in 1960. And so we're going to have that window refinished. We're not replacing that window. It's a big bay window, and we're going to paint it a beautiful sort of an oceany blue-green color. Same with the doors. Anyway, in dog news, Waffles was fat-shamed at the vet last weekend, and now he's on a diet. At 42 pounds, he is officially a fat beagle. We did an ultrasound on him, and I said out loud, "Oh my God, please have a 12-pound tumor," because I knew that I would never hear the end of it from my vet, and it has been 10 days, and I still have not heard the end of it. Rufus, however, is doing great. Ben has been taking him on longer walks, and he's been pretty chill about the contractors being here, working right outside the door where he hangs out with Ben during the day. He really managed the heartworm treatment quite well. Sometimes I think it was harder on us. He and Waffles have been having some low-key playing time and some outside trotting around time while we ramp up his activity level very slowly, and I think it's time to see about getting him into some boot camp. Okay, I think that's enough complaining and banal household updates for today. I wanted to circle back, though, to something that I've talked about before and something I talked about on the Patreon, and that is my inability to read a book for the last 3 years. And I think I figured it out. I'm so distracted by my own life, by the clutter in the house, which, you know, is a constant source of shame and paralyzation in me trying to fix it or get a handle on it. Plus the actual job, which I do from home 75% of the time, and the side hustles of podcasting and writing and helping out at the animal hospital. All of these things have made it impossible for me to relax at home. I can absolutely read a book while waiting at the doctor's office, though, or when I'm getting new tires put on the car, or any place other than at home or the office where I definitely can't get anything done. So I think I may have found a little workaround, and that is I'm going to find a Starbucks or a Panera or a local coffee shop, and there are very few here because everything is a stupid chain, that still has comfy chairs and hasn't completely turned into just a drive-thru. And try to schedule a few hours every week where I literally go and either write or read away from home and office. Panera has this thing where you pay a flat rate every month, and I think it might be $11, and you can get all the hot and cold beverages you could possibly drink every month, plus a percentage off of treats. And they are building a brand new Starbucks and rehabbing a Dunkin' Donuts right up the street from us, so I'm hoping one of them will still have comfy chairs and power outlets. Although I'm totally not really cool with how shitty Starbucks is with busting unions all over the country, so they are not my first choice. If you can think of a place that I might be missing that has some comfy chairs where I could sit for 2 hours or 3 hours a week and not get hassled, let me know. Wegmans and Whole Foods both have cafes, but their chairs are not very comfortable. They're hard and wooden. Even a brew pub would work, but comfy chairs is really a must. Okay, I think it's time to get caught up on food holidays and food-related things. Did I tell you that we finally used the pressure canner? We made chicken soup, and it turned out great. In fact, the husband of a hospital manager at the vet's office was so sick with COVID, and he's not a youngster. He's 82, so it was pretty concerning. So we sent some to him, and the next day he was feeling so much better. So we gave him another batch this weekend to ensure that he continues to improve. Not sure what we'll make next, but it was surprisingly easy, although it only holds 5 quarts at a time, and it takes an hour and 45 minutes to fully pressurize. So it's an all-day affair if you're making a big batch. I think I still like hot water bath canning better for those big batches of high-acid things, but you cannot beat canning life-affirming chicken soup for friends. Peaches are pretty much done at the farmer's market. The last batch I got were so mealy, probably from how dry it was. So I put what I had left in the freezer and will probably start making jam once my work schedule relaxes a little bit and the contractors get done working outside my workroom for canning, which is the dining room where the tree fell. And here's what I have on my list of jams for the fall. Strawberry, strawberry sauce, white peach raspberry, peach vanilla sauce, fig and port preserves, peach and hot pepper sauce, peach ginger jam. I already made a big batch of boozy cherries because you really have to make those when the cherries are in the stores. You can't really freeze them without them getting all mushy, which is fine for jam, but not fine if you need the cherries to stay cherry-shaped. The farmers markets no longer have those good plums, and Ben and I were talking, and we think none of the orchards actually grow them, but the farmers were buying them at the produce market and selling them, which I don't mind, but some of the markets have rules about how it's producer-only. Because the last few years, there have just been zero plums at any of the local farmers markets. Sometimes they have those little tiny plums, but those are not the ones that I want. Anyway, I can get plums at the grocery store and make plum lemon jam, which is delicious. There are lots of apples showing up, and I'll probably make a few batches of applesauce. I like to make an apple and pear sauce, an applesauce sweetened just with maple syrup instead of sugar, and an applesauce with vanilla bean. Sometimes I'll make a few quarts of apple pie filling. But I'll be honest that I don't find that the canned pie filling is better or even equal to just supermarket apples for an apple pie when you're making it fresh. Usually we get a case of tomatoes at the farmer's market, at least one, and make tomato sauce, but I'm not sure we'll do that this year, because I like to get at least one case of the yellow tomatoes, because the yellow ones are lower in acid and are sweeter, but I haven't seen them by the case at any of the vendors this year. So that's what's going on at the farmer's market these days, even though I didn't go this week. I'll probably go to the Thursday morning market and maybe get some pumpkins for the front steps. And I think the apple guy who reminds me of my dad is at that one. And he's always nice to talk to about apples. He always has a bunch of heirloom apples and loves to hear what I'm making with them. A lot of the vendors at the farmer's markets have so much to give, you know, not just selling fruit and vegetables, but their knowledge about the best this for that. Someday that'll all be gone if we don't write it down. All right, food holidays for next week. Today, Sunday the 17th of September, is Apple Dumpling Day. And I mean, they're fine, but the ones I've had have been kind of glumpy. And I wonder if they'd be better that instead of using pie crust, we used puff pastry. And maybe I'll try that out when I get a bunch of apples. It's also Monte Cristo Sandwich Day, which is like if a grilled ham and cheese met a French toast and they had a mad affair. And if you hear some weird rustling noises, it's because Clown Shoes is insisting on being in my lap. And he's aggressively snuggling because he's the only cat in the podcasting room and he's taking advantage of it. Okay, Monday the 18th is Cheeseburger Day. And let me tell you a little something about a cheeseburger place here that just announced it was closing. It is a Fatburger franchise that opened this time last year to great fanfare, and it was so terrible. The service was terrible. The food was terrible. We went there twice, and both times it took over 45 minutes to get our food. It's hamburgers, for God's sakes. It's not souffles. The first time they gave our order to somebody else and then gave Ben some grief about it when he complained. We gave them another chance, and it was just as shitty. And frankly, in a community that has two McDonald's, a Five Guys, a Wendy's, two Burger Kings, a Checkers, a Sonic, and an Arby's within 1 square mile, people have a lot of choices for hamburgers. And I'm not even counting all the non-hamburger restaurants. I don't feel bad about this one going under. I just wish there were more opportunities for non-franchised, non-chain restaurants. You'd think in this economy with so much empty rental space that it would be great opportunity for property managers to take some chances on some local mom and pop places. But I guess you can just write off your losses when these places sit empty. It's one of the biggest beefs I have with Northern Virginia is the lack of small business support, and I tell my elected officials that every chance I get. Anywho, back to cheeseburgers. I've recently been introduced to the magic that is a smash burger, which is a way of cooking a burger with a heavy weight on it, so it's all crispy and caramelized on the outside, but still juicy on the inside, and oh my god, I love it so much. I don't quite understand the physics of it, but it is delish. I totally recommend smash burgers. Tuesday, November 19th is Talk Like a Pirate Day, and I swear to god, if you even try that with me, I will block you so fast you won't even know what happened. But it's also Butterscotch Pudding Day, and for some reason I'm convinced I already talked about this last month, and I mentioned that the best butterscotch pudding was at Trinity Brew House in Providence, and I've never had better butterscotch pudding anywhere ever, and now I think I need to call Josh Miller and find out whether I can get a copy of that recipe. On Wednesday, the 20th, Waffles would like to report out that it is NFT Day, which stands for Non-Findable Treats. Those are treats that Ladybug would miss out on because she was blind and her nose was faulty as well. So he would try to find them for her and then he would eat them. There are fewer NFTs these days because Waffles is now on a very strict diet and because Rufus has a pretty good working nose. But you could celebrate this holiday by checking under the sofa for all of the plush toys and any edible treats and make both dogs happy. And speaking of awesome dogs, it's also National Queso Day, which is either a cheese or a golden retriever we all loved dearly, or both, you decide. It's also German World Children's Day, which I don't think I need to tell you, probably not for eating, probably somehow for appreciating, not really sure. It's also Rum Punch Day, but do not give to children. But I don't want it either, so don't give it to me. Thursday, September 21st, is International Banana Festival. How will we celebrate? Banana bread, banana pudding, bananas foster, banana splits, banana cream pie, banana vana fo fana, fee fi fo, banana! Hold on, I need to breathe into a paper bag. It is also World Gratitude Day, and I am grateful for bananas. Friday is Ice Cream Cone Day, and I am not sure that's the same as Ben and Jerry's Free Cone Day. Hold on, let me check. No, it is not. That was in April. But you can still get an ice cream cone on Friday. In fact, here is a little gift from me to you. Leave work at lunch, get ice cream, don't go back to work. You're welcome. Saturday, the 23rd, is White Chocolate Day, and I know there will be untold numbers of people in my mentions who will tell me that white is not a chocolate, but I do not care. Your opinion does not matter to me. I love white chocolate. My favorite treat is white chocolate raspberry stars from Godiva, and I was so bummed when Godiva closed all their brick-and-mortar stores, because I used to be able to get a whole box of those white chocolate raspberry stars, and every time I went to the mall. Which, by the way, is right next to my office. Those were the days. Saturday is also the fall equinox. Yay for cooler weather, and it's time to put up the Halloween inflatables. Finally, Sunday is Cherry's Jubilee Day, which is that dessert that they bring to your table at fancy steakhouses, and then they set it on fire for you. The dessert, not your table. It's also World Rivers Day, so please stop using single-use plastic shit and overly using pesticides and fertilizers, because way too much of it ends up in the rivers, killing everything. It's our drinking water, you know, so just quit it. Okay, so lots of stuff going on this week, from kitty integration and epic battles, I'm sure, to a potential government shutdown at the end of the week and big auto worker strike. So just remember, you can support this podcast by joining the Patreon. I seriously only need like 500 Patreons, and then I can go part-time at the job and do content creation almost full-time. Be vigilant about your COVID stuff. Get new masks, be wary of close quarters, say no to things if they don't seem safe, and get your booster shot as soon as you can. And three, finally, something I have reminded you of before but seems especially important in light of strikes and work stoppages and crossing picket lines. Record profits are unpaid wages. Remember that. See you next week.